The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. We welcome you to the show. We are always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about business. And we're going to be talking about small business in particular. We're going to be talking about what the Small Business Administration is doing. But we're focused in on small businesses and government contracting and business development. A lot of people will say in these times of possible sequestration, of these times of the government kind of, you know, shrinking and the budget kind of getting smaller and everything else, is there still room for small businesses? Is there still room for small businesses to come in there and get contracts, whether it be a woman-owned business or whether it be a minority-owned business or veteran-owned businesses? Can these small businesses get in there and still compete with maybe some of these medium-sized and maybe some of these larger government contractors that are out there? We're going to be talking to John Shiraka. He is the Associate Administrator of the Government Contracting and Business Development side of the Small Business Administration, and he's going to be answering our questions today and giving us some insight. Hey, John, welcome to Fed Access.
Thanks for having me, Derek.
Hey, we're glad to have you on. John, I want to start off with, you know, you got an interesting background, and, you know, just for people to even get some insight about you, you're not just somebody who's been in government all the time. You are a person who kind of came from the small business side. Give your story right quick, because I think it kind of provides some insight that you, you know, have been on that side and,
sure,
and you saw it.
Sure. So I actually managed and operated a small business government contracting operation that my dad started back in the 1980s. And for over 20 years, we, you know, pursued government contracts. We worked with U.S. Agency for International Development and other donor agencies. And so I had a lot of experience on bidding on contracts and pursuing contracts and implementing small business set-aside contracts. And for a period of time, I actually chaired an association that represented small business government contractors as well before joining the government.
Yeah. What did you see, you know, when you were on that side and you were on the other side, what did you see as either some of the, you know, the pros, and what did you see as some of the cons, the difficulties in being a small business trying to bid on some of these contracts?
Sure. I think as a small business, the government procurement arena can seem daunting, right? If you haven't experienced working with the government, if you look at the various regulations and requirements and the hurdles to jump over, it can seem daunting. But one of the things that, you know, I learned early on is getting a foothold in, either through a subcontract or with a larger prime on a federal contract or a small prime contract, getting that first foothold in really helps you to gain traction, develop relationships within an agency, and then build on that foothold to expand your business. It is quite different than doing work in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
There are long pipelines that you have to look at. There are procurement cycles and processes that you have to be familiar with. But it is a very vibrant market. I mean, even as budgets shrink, the federal government is the largest procurer of goods and services in the entire world, $400 to $500 billion every year.
Wow. You know, with that, John, you know, a lot of people, especially small businesses, and some people get concerned, especially when they're looking at the government contracting market, is, you know, can they survive the time period that it takes to go through these contracting processes? Can they, you know, if it may take several months, and some people get concerned about that. What would be your advice, especially if somebody's thinking about starting a small business, or if a small business is thinking about going into this arena? You know, how do you deal with those long kind of periods in which you're kind of bidding, you're working through this process, you're doing the paperwork and everything else before you can even win that contract and get paid?
Yeah, and I would point to the resources that we have available in helping you through that process, right? I mean, and you mentioned that I was on the private sector, and oftentimes when we are the small businesses managing and implementing our own companies and our own programs, we feel that we know it best, and we can't imagine that we could go to a consultant, they could provide us real useful information, right? I was on that boat. And,
right.
and now that I'm on the other side of the fence, I oftentimes kick myself that I didn't take advantage of these resources. But both the SBA and our resource partners, like the Small Business Development Center, the Women's Business Centers, SCORE chapters, all provide free resources for you to be able to identify where and who in the government is buying what you're selling. They will help you in targeting your market research and your marketing. They will help you in developing proposals to pursue these types of projects. You're absolutely right. It is a longer time frame, and you have to seed a lot of ground before you see the fruits of your work. But as I mentioned earlier, once you gain traction, there is a lot of benefit in working with the government. The government generally doesn't default, right, on paying you
right.
when you get your job done, where in the private sector, sometimes you have issues getting paid. And I would add that, you know, under this administration, we implemented Quick Pay, which pays federal contractors in 15 days from invoicing, which has been a huge benefit to both large and small businesses working with the federal government.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned what you did, because as a small business owner myself, I look at that as well, is that oftentimes we think we know, or we think we can just find out and everything else. And you mentioned a couple different things, SCORE, the Small Business Development Centers. You know, I really want to kind of talk to people about that, because a lot of times we have to let our egos go, right, John?
Absolutely.
You know, and we've got to kind of say, you know what, maybe, like you said, I don't know it all, and it doesn't hurt to get some help, some consulting. How do people find out about these Small Business Development Centers, the Women's, you know, Development Centers, and the SCORE? Where do you find that information out?
Yeah, and thanks for asking that. And I absolutely agree with you. It's a question of knowing your own business and feeling that maybe nobody can help. But these resources, which are available at SBA.gov, if you go to SBA, Small Business Administration, SBA.gov, there is a place where you can put in your zip code. And it will give you a list of the closest resources available in your area. Some of these will be the Small Business Development Centers, the SCORE chapters, and it should even have the PTAC, the Procurement Technical Assistance Centers, that are available for assistance in the local area. And one thing that I would add is, from area to area, the first resource that you may reach out to may not be the best match. So you might need to do a little bit of research to find the best match for your business. It might not be the SBDC, it might be the SCORE chapter. So it takes a little bit of time, and you just mentioned you're a small business, as I was, and I know that we are always looking at the next project or implementing the current project or worried about payroll and are oftentimes busy.
Mm-hmm.
But I would really encourage small businesses to reach out and use these resources that are free to the taxpayers, right? They've already paid for these resources.
Right.
And the last thing, if I could mention, is we have a resource we call GC, or Government Contracting Classroom, which is available on our website, that also has self-paced modules for folks to go through and learn about government contracting.
You know, with all of that, and we're going to keep on going further in, but, you know, in all of that dynamic, the free resources actually, you know, especially for a small business, you can, because a lot of people don't start off with business plans. They don't start off with marketing plans. They don't
right.
start off with writing all of these things. As a small business, you get an idea and you get it going, and then sometimes you start getting paid for it and everything else. And so a lot of times with these Small Business Development Centers, this is where you can get that kind of stuff to kind of say, hey, listen, you've got to learn how to write this. This is how you do proposal writing and everything else. Is that right, John?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those are the resources that are out there for free, and it really will help you. And the Procurement Technical Assistance Centers can even review proposals and give recommendations on improvement on your proposals. And they're really key and helpful in making sure that, you know, you've at least benefited from all the free resources that are out there to help you get the government contract.
We're talking to John Sciarocca. He's the Associate Administrator for Government contracting and small and business development, I should say, for the Small Business Administration. We're learning about what's going on. John has mentioned that there is still resources out there. There's money out there for small businesses. We're learning about this process on FedAccess. We're going to keep on going. John, we come back. I want to go into your office and all the different things you guys do in terms of looking at, you know, small disadvantaged women-owned businesses, looking at, you know, small business determinations, looking at all the different kind of programs to make them competitive and what you guys do to help out. We're listening to FedAccess with Derek T. George on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to FedAccess with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about small business. We are talking about if you're a small business owner and you have not got a government contract, it's something that you need to be considering. The government is doing a lot of interesting things. We just learned about a program called Quick Pay that you can get paid within 15 days of invoicing. We learned that the government is definitely looking for small business owners and small business firms to provide services and products to these agencies, and that market is still there and will continue to be there. We're talking to John Sciarocca. He has been providing us this information. He's Associate Administrator of Government Contracting and Business Development at the Small Business Administration, and he's given us some insight on what's going on in terms of the federal government and small business. John, your office really kind of gets broken up into a number of different areas: government contracting, business development, hub zone. I want to kind of go down and start breaking these things down.
Sure.
So that a person can understand what you do for small businesses. When we talk about the Office of Government Contracting, break that down. What do you guys do within this office?
So government contracting is basically responsible with working with all of our sister agencies to make sure that the federal government meets its statutory requirement of setting aside contracts for small businesses.
And let me ask this question, John. Does every agency have a set aside? I mean, so much percentage of business has to go to small business?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So the federal government goal statutorily is 23%. And we look at that as a floor, right? Last year, for the second time in 8 years, we were able to achieve that goal and surpass it. We got to 24.99, almost 25%. And we work with every agency to establish a goal for that particular agency depending on what they buy. If it's small business friendly, that goal is going to be much higher. As an example, our goal as an agency, the SBA, is over 70%. Some agencies that have a much more difficult environment for small businesses, like the Department of Energy, have goals as low as 7%. So it really is dependent on your mix of procurements.
You know, when you look at that, and now, is that 23%, is that direct contracts with agencies, or is that also being maybe a sub for a large contract or a medium-sized contract where you're a sub? What does that combine in?
The 23% is actually prime contracts directly with business. We also have subcontracting goals for agencies as well.
You know, when we look at this dynamic and we kind of talk about the initiatives and everything else, when you monitor this kind of 23%, does every agency have that small business office that's going to provide that management and technical assistance, you know, to the and kind of walk people through their processes?
Yeah.
How does that work with all the agencies?
That's a great question, because a lot of folks who do work even currently with the federal government sometimes overlook the role that the OSDBOON, we love using acronyms, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization at every agency is responsible for. So every agency has an advocate for small business. Every agency has a goal, and the OSDBOON director is really responsible for helping that agency meet that goal.
Mm.
And what they really do is be the advocate for the small businesses that come to the agency and want to work with the agency. So they'll have the requirements, they'll have the forecasts, they will know what's being set aside for small businesses, and they're really the entree for that small business into that agency. What I'd add here is that, you know, previously, several years ago, some of the OSDBOON directors sometimes were buried in the organizational structure and chart of an agency. What this administration has asked over the last several years is that the OSDBOON director report either to a deputy secretary or a secretary. And that's really elevated the position and really highlighted the agency's goals and their performance against those goals.
You know, with that and with that elevation of that role, have you seen agencies take that more serious? I mean, I know there was definitely, and I've seen definitely a lot more emphasis in small businesses, you know, within the past several years. Are we seeing that now? Like all agencies are definitely having that conversation at an executive, at an SES level to say, hey, listen, where's our small business contracts at? How many people are we meeting our goals?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's really had a lot to do with us in meeting the goal over the last several years, right? Last year and in 14, exceeding the 23%. So I think it's not only the OSDBU director reporting to the deputy secretary or higher. The other thing that the administration and the White House asked was that if you're a senior executive service member, regardless if you're on the acquisition side or the program side, you should have a goal, small business goal for your office, and you should be held accountable to that goal. And in fact, your performance review at the end of the year should incorporate if you made or did not make that goal.
And you kind of see this from a couple of different perspectives. Are you seeing that small business owners are definitely knocking on the federal door? Are you seeing qualified small business owners? Or is there a need for even a bigger competitive marketplace in terms of small business owners out there?
I think there's always opportunity for small businesses to join the federal marketplace.
Okay.
I think you just put your finger on it. It creates competition, but because of the number of small businesses playing in the market, you know, it's a win-win. The businesses get the oxygen to grow their firms and grow their revenues, but the federal government gets access to some of the most creative, ingenuitive, most flexible companies to provide them services and goods.
Right. You know, I know there's a couple different programs. You've got, you know, 8-8. You've got, you know, small businesses that are owned and economic disadvantaged individuals.
Yep.
You've got, you know, small businesses that are in areas that are, you know, hubs. What are those kind of different programs that sometimes can really set aside a small business that can really help out?
That's a great question, because in addition to the 23% overall goal, the federal government actually has what we call the socioeconomic goals.
Okay.
And so we call it the 5-5-3-3, which is basically 5% for small disadvantaged businesses or 8A companies, 5% for women-owned small business companies, 3% for hub zone or historically underutilized businesses, and 3% for service-disabled veteran-owned small businesses. And I can get into more detail on each of those if you'd like.
I definitely would love. Let's hit the first one. I mean, you know, the first 5%, the 5-5-3-3.
Yeah.
Break those down, John.
So on the first one, the 5% is for small disadvantaged businesses or 8A companies. That is a certification program, which we actually will front-end certify a firm into the program. It's really a business development program. It's a 9-year business development program for socially and economically disadvantaged firms. There are some requirements with respect to net worth and income, et cetera, but it really is a unique program to take a company through a 9-year business development process, and during those 9 years, that company is eligible for contracts specifically set aside for that program. Mm. And that's where that 5% goal comes from.
Now, when you said that there has to be kind of a net worth, I mean, do they already have to be a business already established that's bringing in so much money right now?
Yeah, the net worth is based on the owner of the firm.
Okay.
But there is a requirement in the 8A program, there is a requirement for being in business for 2 years. Now, that can be waived in certain situations, but there is a requirement to show that you have some business under your belt and that you can benefit from this 9-year program.
Got you. So they really kind of want to see that you're not just a brand new at the market,
right,
but you've kind of tested the waters a little bit. You have a maybe stable plan, and now you're looking to grow.
Yeah, and I think it's really key, because if you have that under your belt, you really can take advantage of the program to grow your business.
Got you. Break the other five, the second five down.
So the second 5% is the women-owned small business program. And here again, the federal government has a goal of 5%. And this is specifically for contracts set aside for firms owned and controlled by women. This is not a front-end certification program like the 8A program. So the 8A program, you know, we ask for a lot of documentation on the front end. We require to be certified in the program, make sure that you meet the requirements. On the Women-Owned Small Business Program, as it stands today, there are some requirements to upload data into our repository. You register with the Systems for Acquisition Management when you do work with the federal government, and you self-represent. You do a check mark saying, yes, you are indeed woman-owned. Where we get involved as an agency is in case of a protest. Let's say you win a contract and the second-ranked firm says, yeah, I don't think you are woman-owned. In that case, we get involved and ask for the documentation. So it's much more of a back-end process in the case of a protest where my office would get involved.
Gotcha. You know, with this, I mean, and I'm thinking, you know, with 8A and women-owned, some people can fall in a couple different categories.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can be 8A, right? And, you know, because that may fall under, and is that kind of just your different socioeconomic groups, whether it be African-American or Hispanic or Native American? And then you could be a woman who is one of these, right?
Absolutely.
And how does that work, John?
So actually, that's an excellent point that you make, because you could have multiple designation. In fact, you could be 8A Hub Zone, woman-owned, and service-disabled.
Right.
And that is a real attractive type of firm for an agency. And the reason I say that is because they can get multiple credit for achievement towards their goal, right? So if they give out $1 million contract, it will count against their goal for all of those socio-categories.
Wow. John, hold that for 1 second. I want to get into more when we come back. We got to take a quick break. We are talking to John Sciarocca. He is the Associate Administrator of the Office of Government Contracting and Business Development at the Small Business Administration. You can find them at sba.gov. We're talking about government contracting today and small business. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about small business, and we have been talking about small business as it relates to government contracting and business development, and really kind of getting your office and getting your small business really kind of tied into this whole dynamic of being a government contractor, succeeding in this marketplace, and then really kind of going from there and growing. We're talking to John Sciarocca. He is the Associate Administrator of Government Contracting and Business Development at the Small Business Administration. They are the experts in terms of helping small businesses, you know, start up, manage their business, grow and succeed. We want to see small businesses succeed in America, because a lot of times it's the small businesses that are really the foundation of America. If you look at the number of people who are employed by small businesses, and we want to get them government contracts. John, when we were talking about the 5-5-3-3 kind of plan in terms of 5% 8A, 5% women-owned business. Break the other three down, the other two threes.
Sure. So the other, the next 3%, I guess, is our Hub Zone program, or historically underutilized business zone program. And that, again, is similar to the 8A program in the sense that it is a front-end certification process. The requirements there are that the primary office doesn't have to be your headquarters. It doesn't have to be headquarters. It has to be the office where most of your employees work. That has to be in what we call the historically underutilized business zone. How that's determined is through economic unemployment, poverty rates. It's a study or a formula that the agency housing and urban development prepares. And based on those, we have maps where these historically underutilized business zones all across America exist. So your primary office has to be in that hub zone, and then 35% of your employees have to reside in a hub zone as well. Not the same hub zone. They could reside in any hub zone, but it's required that 35% of your employees reside in a hub zone. And we certify the firms into the program. Unlike the 8A program, there's no time limit, right? As long as you maintain your eligibility, you can remain in the program and benefit from the set-asides. And the federal government has a goal of 3%.
And, you know, with all of this, when we look at the small businesses, I mean, that can be everywhere from, you know, a person could have a 2-person company to a 20-person company, right? I mean, there's no kind of dynamic there where the federal government says you have to be this size, right?
Absolutely. Of course, you know, we have our size standards to make sure that you are indeed small.
Right, right.
But it could be, you know, a mom and small mom and pop shop. It could be sometimes up to 100 employees.
You know, with all of that, when we're looking at kind of the hub zone, and a lot of those are kind of your cities, right?
Your
Baltimore,
inner cities,
your Detroit,
correct.
Your inner cities, where we want to kind of encourage maybe small business to have an anchor there.
Absolutely.
And hopefully grow and employ. Now, is there a dynamic of saying, hey, we encourage you to employ people in these hub zones?
Absolutely. So 35% of your staff has to reside in a hub zone.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government, quite frankly, that's one of the goals where we've had a difficult time meeting the goal of 3%.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I think in 2014, we achieved something around 1.8%. So there's a significant, you know, gap there in meeting the goal. And we've been doing a lot to encourage firms to look at this program because every agency is trying to meet this goal. There's a lot of opportunities. And what a lot of agencies tell us is we need more hub zone certified firms. So we've been trying to recruit firms into this program. We've had an initiative around the country, which we call Destination Hub. We were out in Oklahoma. We did an event out in California in Fresno. We were in Detroit. We're looking to do an event in Baltimore, actually. You mentioned Baltimore in October. And it's really trying to encourage small businesses to come to these historically underutilized business zones to establish their businesses, but then benefit from the set-aside program.
You know, that really means a lot to me. I'm from Detroit, and so, I, you know, seeing that, you know, the city and encouraging people to get to those cities and really kind of help turn around, I mean, that's needed in Detroit and Baltimore and other areas.
Absolutely.
What's that last 3%, John?
The last 3% is the service-disabled veteran-owned small business goal. So as an administration, as a government, obviously we're very thankful to our veterans for the service that they provide the country. And as a government, we have a goal to make sure that 3% of contracts get into the hands of service-disabled veterans. And this goal actually had not been achieved until the first time when we achieved it in 2012. And so we have a lot of training with respect to understanding the program, with respect to benefiting from the program. And the one thing I really want to clarify is that this is not a front-end certification program. It is a self-representation program, much like the Women-Owned Small Business program. So, you know, a service-disabled veteran, when they register to do work with the federal government, they can self-represent that they are service-disabled. Where my office gets involved is not, again, on the front end. On the back end, in case of a protest, that's when we ask for the documentation to make sure that you are indeed who you say you are.
But, you know, and I kind of want to make sure that people understand, although it may not be front end and it's self-representation, if a person is being fraudulent, there are some heavy consequences to that, right, John?
Absolutely. We want to make sure, obviously, that the benefits of our programs flow to the intended recipient.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously people make mistakes, right? So if you make a mistake, if it's a legitimate mistake, we're not going to suspend you or debar you or ban you from doing work with the federal government. But when there is evidence of intentional misrepresentation, we actually work very, very quickly with our Office of General Counsel to suspend and debar those bad actors.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, over the last 3 years, we've had more suspensions, debarments, or proposed suspensions and debarments than in the previous decade combined. And that's not to dissuade folks from coming in and joining the federal marketplace. It's just to say that, you know, we want the benefits to flow to the intended recipients.
Right. And I think the key thing, the key message is that, you know, if you have this, you know, I mean, you're legitimate. The government wants you.
Absolutely.
I mean, and, you know, and if you don't have it, doesn't mean the government doesn't want you. There are still opportunities regardless of whether you fit within the 5533. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when we look at that piece, John, you know, when we look at kind of the business development side of it, what is that office, you know, focused in on?
So the business development is part of our 8A program, right?
Okay.
So part of the 9-year program is through our district offices, and we have 68 district offices around the country, we provide technical assistance, opportunities for growth, management training for you to develop over those 9 years. And during those 9 years, you can benefit from set-aside contracts. But the intent is that after those 9 years, you are advanced enough to be able to go out and compete on a full and open basis.
You know, with all of that, and it is the 9 year when a person enters in, and can people hear 9 years, mm-hmm. but when a person enters into that program, is that kind of a 9 year obligation, or that's kind of saying, hey, listen, you're part of a 9 year program. Is that a contract that's signed with the federal government, or how is that?
Yeah, it's not so much a contract or an obligation, but it's really an opportunity to benefit from the tools that are available to the firm.
Gotcha.
A firm can at any point decide to leave the program, but you can only benefit from the program
if you're in it 9 years. Got it. Well, after 9 years, hopefully a person has now developed the subject matter expertise that they can operate on their own and get those contracts and kind of go from there. You know, when does the SBA, you know, how they're, and John, you know about, there's different places that have like incubators and other places like that. Does the SBA also do that?
Yeah, we do. So that doesn't fall under my umbrella office, mm-hmm. but our Office of Entrepreneurial Development actually provides grants to incubators that have startups, that have some government contractors that are providing some very unique tools and products to the federal government.
Outstanding. We're talking to John Sciarocca. He is the Associate Administrator over the Office of Government Contracting and Business Development at the Small Business Administration. We're talking about small business. We're talking about small business and government contracting. We're talking about getting the resources, the technical resources, the management resources, and other resources in the hand of small business owners so that you can get these government contracts so you can succeed in this marketplace. There's definitely money out there. There's products and services that the federal government needs, and there's resources to help you succeed in this market, and we're talking about that today. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been having an interesting conversation about small businesses. We've been talking about small businesses in terms of government contracting. There's definitely a market out there. If you're a small business owner that's looking to kind of say, hey, listen, I want to grow my business. I want to kind of really expand, you know, the marketplace that I'm in. Then you may want to take a look at the government marketplace. If you're a small business owner already who's in the government marketplace and you say, listen, I've done a couple of things here and there, but I want to continue to grow my business. And maybe you have not tapped into the resources of the Small Business Administration. We're talking about what resources are there to help you, you know, really kind of thrive, to really help you grow. We're talking to John Sciarocca. He is the Associate Administrator over the Office of Government Contracting and Business Development. And we're talking about what they do for small businesses. Hey, John, you know, and I wanted to ask this question because you mentioned it before about kind of small business size determination. Yep. How do we determine what is a small business?
Yeah. So we actually have an office that develops size standards for every North American Industry Classification Code, NAICS code. And I said earlier, we love acronyms
yeah,
from the government.
Yeah, definitely.
But basically, we have a team of economists that determine what is small for any sector or any industry. And, you know, when you look at, I get this question all the time, how can 1,500 employees be small?
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the ship manufacturing industry, where the average size of the business is, you know, tens of thousands, 1,500 is actually small.
Okay.
You know, they have all sorts of economic models that they look at, but the one basic guideline is that no dominant firm would fall within the small business size standard.
You know, it's really about the marketplace you're operating. I mean, if it's looking at the competitive marketplace and then maybe you're going up against GE or so, something like that, then, you know, maybe 1,500 would kind of be, like you said, very, very small in comparison to a massive corporate. Is it looking at that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at an industry like personal services or consulting,
mm-hmm.
the size standard used to be 7, and it recently increased to 14.
Gotcha.
When you look at IT services, that's a much bigger industry. A lot of the firms are much larger. The size standard there is 35 million, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All these size standards are on our website. The one thing I should add is that, you know, size standards hadn't been adjusted for decades, and the Small Business Jobs Act of 2010 actually required my office to review all the size standards. Some are employee-based, some are revenue-based. We were required to look at all of them, update them. We're almost all done with that process now, and then we're required to start all over again every 5 years moving forward.
So some of these things are going to be adjusted. So if a person applied right now and then kind of say, hey, listen, can you retake, you know, what I'm doing in consideration, there may be an opportunity to have somebody actually take a look at their business and then say, hey, you know what, maybe you do fit under small. Is that possible?
Yeah, so, I mean, when it comes to the small business size standard, and, you know, when you are a small business, it's very much a self-representation program, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we do something on the front end. If you are, let's say, and I'll make this up, you know, you make widgets and you find that the federal government buys widgets and you register to do work with the federal government, when you register, it'll ask you, you know, what are your incomes over the last several years? It'll say, or maybe if it's a manufacturing base, what is your number of employees? And right there in SAM, it'll say, yes, you actually do qualify as small under this particular industry. Now, obviously, where we get involved as an office, if there's a protest, we would then actually review your documentation again to make sure that you are indeed small.
You know, when we look at the other things that's under your area, I see a couple interesting things I want to kind of get into before we have to close out today. What's the TechNet? What is that about, John?
TechNet.
And when we talk about the TechNet, I looked on your website, and it was kind of about this funding. It's like a technical dynamic that's funding and other things like that, getting small businesses some funding pieces. Is there anything that goes along with kind of maybe technology and funding?
There is. So in our and it doesn't exactly fall under my umbrella office, but we have what we call the SBIR program,
mm-hmm.
Small Business Innovation and Research Program.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal government, when they give an agency a budget, there's a certain percentage of that has to be allocated towards the SBIR program. In other words, every agency from Department of Defense to Health and Human Services to NASA has to set a particular percentage of their procurement budget aside for research and innovation. We as an agency sort of monitor that and make sure that they are indeed setting that aside and that there are indeed small businesses playing in that marketplace. And there's actually 11 agencies that are required to set funds aside for that SBIR program. It's very unique, in fact, and the way it ties into my office is that oftentimes those innovative technologies which are funded by the federal government become tools and services that the federal government ends procuring. So oftentimes these SBIR firms become federal government contractors in the long run.
Oh, wow, okay. With this, I also saw this subnet, which is kind of the subcontracting network. What's that about, John?
The subnet is a unique tool, and we've actually are going through a process of updating that tool and making it much more user-friendly and much more relevant to today's market. It's a tool that was developed some time ago. It's an opportunity for large prime contractors because, as I mentioned earlier, not only do agencies have prime contracting goals, they have subcontracting goals.
Right.
So every prime contractor, every large prime contractor is trying to identify small businesses to help meet their subcontracting
right.
goals, right?
Right, right?
So this is a tool where prime contractors can actually list out those opportunities that they have for potential small businesses. Quite frankly, the tool has been around for some time, and it probably deserves a refresh, and we're in the process of making sure that that happens.
Do you find, you know, that you're hearing or either getting contacted by a number of the primes who are maybe bigger firms that they're oftentimes having that difficulty of finding, you know, a good sub that maybe fits, you know, 8-8 hub zone or other things like that? I mean, is that where you're kind of hearing that they get concerned about kind of finding the right kind of qualified subs?
Absolutely. I think Every large prime has a small business goal, and they have the socio categories, just like you mentioned, the 8A, hub zone, women-owned, service-disabled goals. And they do have a difficult time sometimes meeting those goals. Now, the one thing that I'll say, and I said this earlier on, that subcontracting opportunity oftentimes is really the entree into federal contracting for a small business. What we try to encourage and what we do through our district offices oftentimes is matchmaking events where the large primes can try to help identify small businesses to work with. So we help promote those matchmaking events. Sometimes our district offices will actually sponsor those matchmaking events. And then there are times where agencies, the OSDBUs, the Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilizations, will host matchmaking events. And then there's our subnet, which, again, is a tool that large primes can use. And you're absolutely right. We've heard that, you know, the more tools, the better, and that's one that we want to improve so that they can use that as well.
John, I got a few seconds. What would be your last little comments to a small business right now?
My one comment, I think, having come from industry, is use the tools that are available there for you for free. SBA.gov, you enter your zip code. It'll give you the resources that you can reach out to. And you may have to do your homework to see what's the best match, but there will be a good match there. And the other point, GC Classroom, sba.gov/GC, which is Government Contracting Classroom. Tons of modules, self-paced, with workbooks. You can do it in your off time. You can do it at home in the evening. And it'll give you the 101 on government contracting, but we have modules on there that are geared towards contracting officers.
John Sciarocca, he is the Associate Administrator of Government Contracting and Business Development. He has provided such a great insight. John, we're going to have you come back because we're going to start focusing on small business on Fed Access a lot more. So I definitely want to continue to hear about these programs.
Excellent. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.